Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday. Today's show is brought to you by BetDSI.com. You guys are talking about Mayweather. You're talking about McGregor. The odds have changed from a 25-1 favorite for McGregor. They've slowly gone down. Then all of a sudden they were 18-1. Then they were under 10-1. 8-1, 7-1. They are right now 6.5-1 for Mayweather. Get yourself an account at BetDSI.com. These guys have been in business for over 20 years. They score an A-plus on many sports review sites. They have made a reputation out of getting paid quick and easy. They've even got mobile access. That's how I play. When you sign up, use the promo code CHAEL200 for my listeners only. CHAEL200, they will give you a 200% bonus on your money. Simple math, you put up $100. When you check out, you're going to have $300 on the books at BetDSI.com just for knowing the promo code CHAEL200. I bring up the Mayweather Mac. Are you on? People are liking you all of a sudden. It's almost like now I have to get your opinion on that. What do you think? Oh, hey, thanks. I got my wallet back.
Oh, how'd that happen?
Yeah, you know, what was I just talking about? Mayweather and McGregor?
Mayweather and McGregor. We'll get back to that later.
They actually tie together, right? Because if you don't have a wallet, how do you put any money up at BetDSI, right? there's our segue, ladies and gentlemen. But it is interesting. I'll finish the Mayweather thing because it is interesting because I have a very strong opinion on this. But other people have a different opinion. And I can say it all I want. It doesn't make me right. I come on here, I'm indignant on certain things, but it doesn't make me right. In fact, history proves me wrong all the time. And now you're starting to see people with other opinions. 25-1. We are now at 6.5-1. It depends when you check at BetDSI. I'm going off of their odds specifically, but ESPN also reported the odds, not for BetDSI specifically, but the odds. They called it 7-1. On a different show, they called it 6-1. BetDSI has it at 6.5. Relevance being, I like Mayweather in this fight. I really do. Fine. Good for me. If I want to take action, and it's headed this way, it's kind of like a start. When do I jump in? That's my question. Do I go lock down 6-1 odds? Or, because it's probably going to go back to 10 or 11, or could go back to 10 or 11 or 12. Or do I go, wait a minute, when the trend is rolling this way, man, are we going to see 3-1? Are we going to see, I can't imagine, but are we going to see 2-1 odds? That would be very crazy for me. I mean, what do you think? You think this is going to get closer? Is the Irish money rolls in and the people come in? Or is that when the boxing community finally hits Vegas and walks up to the windows and go, wait just a second, we're back on our boy here?
Yeah, it's, in the end, I agree. I think Mayweather's going to win this fight. But here's the thing, though, and I was thinking about this a lot, is that everyone says if Mayweather fought McGregor at UFC, McGregor wins that fight every day. There's no question about that. But here's the thing about the difference between Mayweather jumping into UFC versus McGregor jumping into boxing. In UFC, you have so many moves to know and learn or specialize in. And, you know, Conor has his specialties like anybody else. He specializes on certain things and kind of lets other things go. But he knows how to throw a punch. Mayweather couldn't learn all those things in just... How long until the fight? 1 month, 2 months?
Yeah, it's 6 weeks.
6 weeks, yeah. McGregor knows how to throw a punch. So does Mayweather. All McGregor has to do is just hone in on punching. And he's been doing that forever. So that's not that hard for him. So I can see the odds going down in McGregor's favor. To 2-1, probably not. It might fluctuate to that for a minute. But as soon as fight day comes, people are going to be like, you know what? This is going to be a good fight, but it's not going to be that bad. It's going to jump back up to Mayweather's fight.
You think so?
I think so.
That's what I think too. And I mean, I use BetDSI on the mobile app. So, but I check it like most people would, a stocks app, because that line keeps moving and it does matter when you're going to jump in. So, you know, I tell the listeners, go get yourself an account. But the bottom line is you have to be ready. You have to be ready so you can have access to the odds so you can push that button. It's a 24-hour-a-day, 365 cycle. Unlike the stock market where the bell kicks off at 7 a.m. East Coast time. It's not like that. So, you know, I stand by my point. If you're planning on getting action on this, get yourself ready because that line is moving. Now, you did say something, and you represent the masses with your statement. I have heard this from other people, Jacob, that are saying exactly what you did, which is, Chael, you're saying McGregor's never done this before, but he has. He is in the gym boxing every day. He is in there fighting. It's not like the example that I give of LeBron, great athlete, world champion, going over and playing Serena in tennis. And people go, that's not a fair analogy. And I get that. I do. I hear you on that. I just, it hasn't won me over. I still think, just as an MMA guy, that, look, we're going to spend 20% of our time on our hands because we got to go spend 20% on our feet, and we got to slip in a little bit on the knees and elbows, and then you got to put in a huge another 20% portion on the grappling, and then you had a 20% portion on the rest. And before you know it, your time is full. Whereas Mayweather, who has been honed in, second generation, whole family box, I can't see it. But to your point, you are now supported by a young man named Kevin Eubanks Jr., who's the sitting world boxing champion. His opinion has to matter. He agrees with you. And what's interesting about Eubanks is he used to do MMA. So he is saying, hey, listen, I watched the interview. He said, look, the punch, I'm paraphrasing, but what he was saying is the punches are different. The skills are different. Connor's amateurness, as I call it, his lack of experience, is what makes him so dangerous in this fight. Now, that I can relate to as a wrestler. When I would wrestle guys, when I was wrestling really well and at a high level, if I wrestled another guy that was really good and at a high level, it was what I expected. The match would go the way I expected. When I wrestled the guy that wasn't as good, it was a problem. And even if I could have more points than him and beat him, he didn't give me the reactions I was looking for. He wasn't good enough to be a dance partner and flow with me, and it ended up helping him. And my coaches from day one would always tell us in the practice room, go with the best guy you can find because he's not going to hurt you. He's not going to hurt you because he knows what he's doing. If you go grab a guy that you think's going to be an easy workout, it might be. You might get more points than him, but you're going to get a headbutt and an elbow and thrown in the wrong way. It's that roughness from a guy who's inexperienced, at least I think is your argument, which is supported by Kevin Eubanks, who's a sitting world boxing champion, and he used to do MMA. So people are having your opinion more than they're having mine, and that makes me mad.
Well, okay.
But I can't deny it's happening.
That amateur argument is actually universal to all sports. I remember playing baseball in high school, and you know, you're used to maybe seeing 70, 80 mile per hour pitches thrown at you, and then all of a sudden you run into this team, and they throw out this guy who's thrown 60. And that gets to the, you can see that thing coming in like a watermelon, but you're not used to that at all. And so all of a sudden, you expect to be hitting home runs off this guy all day. No, you're hitting little dribblers to the pitcher, and he's just getting you out, and you're like, why aren't we beating this guy? Eventually you do, because, you know, he's not that great, but why aren't we killing this guy?
But you're not used to
it. You're not used to it at all, so same idea.
Do you remember Nate Quarry? He's come in here, been a guest a number of times. Nate, does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Okay. Old teammate of mine. Fought him and practiced him and just every single day. Nate is not fast. I could give Nate a ton of compliments. He's not fast. Jacob, he might have been the most accurate guy I've ever worked out with. I don't know if he threw an air ball with a punch or a kick. Every single one of them was at a slower speed than I was used to, but they would land. And not just on me. I would watch him go with other guys and including in competition. He wasn't fast in competition either. Not a slow guy. It was not fast. He landed every punch. And I'm going, well, Nate, I could go box with you right now. I just watched you go around, and you're slow, and I could see it coming. Well, to your point about when that ball slows down, but you're used to it coming faster, logically, good for you. Reality, no, it takes some time to get used to. Nate will always go down as the most accurate guy. I never saw him miss a punch. Nate Diaz, for that matter, but I'll use Nick, is not a fast guy. and he also doesn't have a high pace. He's credited for his pace because he's a triathlete. One thing about him is he can hold the pace longer than other guys can. But he doesn't go on there like, say, a Yoel Romero that's going to sprint and then slow it down and mix it up on you. Comes out with one pace. His punches aren't overly fast. But he's a lot like Nate. Every single one of them touches something. So there is something to be said from the world I come in to the comparison that you said about baseball, that when you're not used to something, even if it's something worse, if you're not worse in theory, if you're not used to it, it can be very effective.
Yeah, and so that in the end, that helps McGregor, because it's the same thing. McGregor's a southpaw too, right?
Correct.
You remember the movie? Just I'm gonna throw this out there. You remember Rocky?
Yeah.
The movie, and then he was going out to fight Apollo, and they were saying, "Well, we don't want Apollo messing with a southpaw that messes with your timing and all that." And he's like, "No, I'll go with him." And you know, Rocky could fight and all that stuff. And this is totally a fictional movie, but he gave Apollo trouble. Same thing. McGregor is a rookie, but he knows what he's doing. I'm not gonna pretend he doesn't know what he's doing. That's ridiculous. McGregor knows what he's getting into. He's going up against the number one boxer, and he welcomes that, obviously. But, okay, here's a question. How many of Conor's victories have been on the floor? I'm imagining not many.
And I want to say none.
I kind of want to say that, too. They've all been in the air. Now, they all haven't all been punches. There's been quite a few leg kicks to the face and knock, but most have been at least knockouts with his hands, and then they just fall to the ground, and then he's the winner. That alone, right there. I mean, it's not like he's a jiu-jitsu master who came out and said, "Oh, I want to box Mayweather." That's not this at all. And if that was the case, I don't think anyone would be giving McGregor a run for his money, literally. But because he's a boxer and that's how he wins most of his fights, there's something to be said for that.
Sure. Well, hey, and people are agreeing with you. I mean, people are strongly agreeing with you. I look at that and then I critique that a little bit and go, well, I can't deny that he's putting people down with his hands and he's got great hands. I wouldn't attempt to deny that. He does have great hands. You're just comparing him to the greatest of all time, right? So you're talking about a gap here, right? I'm not arguing that a Bentley isn't a fast car, but I would argue that a Lamborghini is a faster car. Fine. And I think that's what we're talking about here. None of it's an insult to Conor, and I will make that very clear. We're comparing him to Floyd. I mean, come on. The one thing with Conor, though, when you do talk about his hands, you got to back it up just a little bit and go, well, what did he do before he landed those punches? Did he land a punch before he landed the knockout punch, or did he land a kick? And that's his setup. That's how he checks his range, and that's how he gets in, and he usually lands a kick. He goes deep to the body or outside leg kick to the head. He'll do some spinning stuff. A lot of it doesn't land, but it makes the opponent look. He's a master of kicking you in the gut, whether it's with that straight teep or whether it's a spinning kick or it's a side kick. You know, you can ask Chad Mendes. He really wore him out with those kicks. They're very hard to see. And then, the punches come. In boxing, you don't have that opportunity. And I think we can all agree, yeah, that favors Floyd. Even the people that are picking Conor, and there's a lot of people, but they are picking him by knockout. They are just saying, look, he's got the power. He's going to find this guy, and he's going to hit him. When I think of myself and put it into Conor's shoes and what he's got to go up against, when I look at the focus group, which is to your point that Conor's knocking everybody out and Floyd hasn't knocked out anybody in a number of years, Floyd hits much harder than Conor. That's a quantifiable thing. Now, we have never quantified it, but there is an actual machine, and you can go punch it. You've probably seen it on these sports science shows. They got something down at the fair that isn't very scientific, but you get my point. We can go hit this thing, and it registers a little bit. Now, that one's more for fun, but they do have them, and they have put them on shows like sports science. You can actually test how much velocity is coming up with some of these punches, how much pounds per pressure, I guess, is how they do it. Floyd will outpunch strength-wise and power-wise Conor in every single punch. Now, there's only four in boxing. You got a jab, you got a cross, you got a hook, and you got an uppercut. Floyd's is harder, and people will go, how can you possibly say that Floyd hits harder than Conor? Conor's knocking people out and Floyd's isn't. First off, the gloves, that's a real easy one. People get that. A more sophisticated one that everybody's missing is what Conor's hitting versus what Floyd's hitting. Conor's hitting an MMA guy that spends, as we talked about, 20% of his time getting out of the way of punches and landing punches. Floyd is throwing punches at a guy that spends 100% of his time at either throwing punches or getting out of the way of punches.
Or absorbing punches.
Or absorbing, or rolling with, exactly, or countering off of. But that's what Floyd's dealing with. So he's throwing his punches that are harder, and I believe faster. I think that one could also be quantified, but people will have a different opinion on that. He's throwing them at targets that are masterful of dealing with those strikes. Connor's throwing them at a guy that does MMA, much like I do. And we just aren't as good at that. We just aren't. So I guess that's my two cents on that. And the odds are changing, and a lot of people aren't agreeing with me. And I'm standing strong on my claim. But I tell you, I was in for this. I got asked this question yesterday. Sean Wheelock asked me this. I filled in for Ben Askren over on Sean Funky and the Baddest Man. I was Funky yesterday. I was Askren, but Sean posed me with a question, and he said, Chael, after the press tour, are you more or less likely to buy this fight? And it was a very hard question for me to answer in those terms because I was in either way. I was on board, man. They're getting my money. There's no way to slice it. I'm paying for that fight. But my anticipation has grown. And the one thing that drives this industry is the speculation. You get a guy like me that comes on here and makes a perfectly logical, historical, I'm bringing evidence in, I'm comparing their two fights, argument to the claim that Connor has next to no chance at victory. But you have other people, and in this case, more people, saying what you're saying. Hey, not so fast. Okay, this isn't taking LeBron and moving him over to tennis. You're taking an all-around fighter and limiting his fighting, but he's still fighting, and you're putting him with a guy that specializes. This is not apples to oranges. Maybe it's just a different sized apple to another apple. I don't agree. You're not going to win me over, but I do have to acknowledge a lot of people are on your side, more people than are on mine. And the odds are reflecting it. You know, tie it back to the bad DSI. That's why it's changed from 25. I thought 25-1 was too close. I thought that was too close. I know you can't get action if you start going that high. Who's going to throw their money down? They can't get any return. I thought that was too close. We're at 6-1. We are at 6-1. I cannot deny that popular opinion sides with you.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people actually just want to see Connor beat Floyd. I mean, you're talking about the press conferences, and it's no secret that Connor's the favorite. I mean, he's the underdog. Everyone knows he's the underdog. As much people can talk about, oh yeah, he does have a chance, but everyone knows he's the underdog. He's going up against a big fish in Floyd Mayweather. Now, does that reflect in their betting? Probably a little bit. But when common sense comes down, when fight night rolls around and they're like, you know, I might lose some money, but just to support Connor in that.
To be part of it.
Just to be part of that, yeah. And say, hey, in case the moon just does jump in front of the sun and the sky turns black and Connor does knock out Floyd, I was right there and that's a story to tell.
Yeah.
Because you bet on Floyd. It's kind of, okay, I'm going to use a slight analogy. A lot of guys, especially teens, will come up to me and I'll catch them like, oh, this is such a bad example.
No, I want to hear it even more.
All right. So they'll be like arm wrestling a girl in their class or something. I'm like, dude, why are you doing that? And they're like, because it's fun. I like beating them. And I'm like, okay, hang on. There's a golden rule here. You never, guys, don't arm wrestle a girl. There's two reasons why. One, if you win, you're just a punk. You're a bully that just beat up on the weaker vessel, basically. And if you lose,
not great.
You have eternal shame at that point. That's not easy to overcome.
Eternal shame.
Now, at the same time, if they bet on Floyd, it's like, well, come on. Where's the fun in that? No, don't do that. This is for fun. We're going to watch the fight, probably not because just in case Connor does beat Floyd, but we want to see Connor go up against someone and actually do it because he says he's going to do it. And yes, we're watching for the spectacle, like you say, because I remember a little bit Mayweather and Pacquiao. I remember the hype for that, but I don't remember it being this big.
Sure.
I mean,
Oh, make no mistake, it was not. Jacob, they sold out four arenas for a press conference, and they didn't even give themselves an opportune time. They're doing this at 3:00 in the afternoon on weekdays.
Yeah.
And they sold out arenas.
Yeah.
That's insane. if you're a boxing promoter and you're sitting down with your fellow executives in an office, you're coming up with a business plan. If some jerk in the room says, yeah, let's make some money by selling tickets to a presser, he's out. They're cutting him right there. Nobody would even suggest such a silly notion. Jacob, they did it 4 days in a row. I don't know what tickets went for. I mean, I got to think these are $10. I can't imagine that you're selling them. There's a report. I don't know if I believe it. A report that they were scalping them. On the streets in L.A. that people got an early bottom, were scalping, and that they were selling. I can't deny it. Even though I don't know that I believe it, I can't deny it. The place was packed, and Toronto was bigger. Toronto had more people the second day than L.A. had the first. And L.A., I'm telling you, it's packed. I don't have official numbers or a fire marshal capacity code. I just know what my eyes told me. And my eyes told me that place is packed. Mm-hmm. Is it sold out? I'm not making that claim. Is it packed? You bet your ass it was. Toronto, I can tell you it was sold out.
Mm-hmm.
They probably broke some rules. They had so many people. It was insane. It looked like a NASCAR event. The way it was set up when everybody's outside and they're in a bleacher system that's elevated. It looked like a NASCAR event.
Yeah.
This is a press conference with no chance of a fight breaking out. They're claiming, I don't know if you saw this. This will blow your mind. They are claiming that the first run of tickets, and that gets, you can't even buy those. That gets released to special email lists and casinos pick them up and everything else. They are claiming, they are selling them for $89,000. Now, those are the tickets that Stallone and Schwarzenegger, Mark Wahlberg, they're going to buy those tickets.
Yeah.
80, that gets you one seat. If you want to bring a date, you better have another 89 grand. Can you imagine?
That's a year. That's a year's pay for some of us.
Taxes. Before you pay tax, that's a salary with benefits. You get $89,000 and they're going to sell them.
Yeah.
It sounds insane to you and I in Oregon. Hey, there's some guys in LA, some guys in New York coming in, some guys coming in from overseas. They're going to throw it down. They might even bring the family, some of these guys. I can't relate to it. I don't get it. You know, you talked about the psychology of a gambler, and you're spot on that, and I can relate. I have the mindset of why you would go out to a desert of Las Vegas and set up casinos, right? I'm playing to lose. I'm not going to leave that table until all my money's gone or until they name that place after me. It's one way or the other. I get a higher emotion. It's a negative emotion, but I get a higher emotion from losing than I do from the emotion of success. I called John Anik. John Anik is a master, longtime gambler, but not only does he understand all of the odds, where to go, he's also got connections in Las Vegas so that he can place a bet that would be above a limit, where he can ask for a such and such guy, and hey, I'm John, and so I went to him. I wanted to place a bet on this. I'm interested in playing. I don't know if I'll do it. I think I'm a lot of talk, but I want to place a bet on this, and I think that in some ways it is an investment. This is what I do. This is what I study, and I do feel strong about it. So I think I have to, and I'll be there. I'll be in Vegas. I think I need to place a bet. I'm saying that in case my wife's listening, and she's like, no, we're not placing the bet. I'm kind of trying to talk her into it. Like, well, you know, I think that there's a little bit to this where I almost have to. Now, I'm not talking about five figures or anything like that, but they only let you place a $500 bet in Vegas. And then they will adjust the line, and if that will move the line. Now, there was a time, and when I'm talking to you about MMA, $500 would move the entire line. There just wasn't much money coming in on that. Boxing, it could be a higher limit. I'm going with the mindset that it's going to be $500. You put that down, it adjusts the line. Then you can do another $500 bet, and then it'll adjust the line. And then you can do it. You can keep doing that, or you got to change sports books or something. So I called John Anik. Can you call in a favor? Can you vouch for me so I can go to a window and place a bet? So we had a little back and forth on this, and I guess all I'm trying to share, I haven't told you about the wallet, have I? I need to tell you about the wallet. I'm looking to put action on it for the very reasons that you said. I want to show people, look, this is what I think. And if I happen to be right, they can all go, wow, he was right. He even bet money on it. And that's a really dumb reason to bet. But that's what's got me motivated. And that was your point. Yeah. That's what other people are doing too, man. There's a lot of people out there like me that possess that gene of, hey, I want to be able to brag if I'm right. And if I don't, I'll tear it up, put it in the garbage can, and act like it never happened. I mean, there's people like that, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Sadly, I think that's probably a character flaw, but I've got it.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app.
This one's a game changer.
There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
You're welcome.
You're welcome
with Chael Sonnen.
Will you ask me about my wallet, you prick? I keep trying to get back to this.
What? Huh? How'd you get your wallet back? And you said it tied into Mayweather and McGregor.
It tied in because if I want to bet on them, I have to have some money. And I don't have a secret stash in a jar somewhere like my grandma used to. I keep it in my wallet. I think that's what most people do. I had no money. I had no way to get money because my cards were in there too. Okay, I got the wallet back. And you'd be stunned how many listeners reached out to me and go, hey, I got to know about the wallet. Did you get it back? So I'm letting everybody know I did get it back in exactly what the Uber guy found me. I had a hard time finding him. I found the Portland office. I had to deal with their times, and I was going to go there in person because the automated system, you know, I was sitting on hold. It was just driving me insane. It would be quicker to just pull up there on 16th and Wielder Street. It's like, hey, it'd just be quicker to do that. Before I could do those things, the driver had done the same thing. He also had to deal with the automated system. He didn't have any route back to me. He did it. He sat and he did it. He sat on hold. He dealt with everything. He found his customer, which was me. He called me up, and he delivered it to my house. Pretty stand-up move by him.
Nice.
Delivered it to my house. I tried to make it right with him on his time, but delivered it to my house. What a cool thing. So by the time I got home from the studio, I'd already worked it out. I was working out on the phone on the way home. He's sitting in my driveway.
Give my wallet back.
How cool is that, though? That's a pretty cool guy right there.
So you didn't have to borrow money for that dinner date.
My mom didn't even know it happened. Everything was smooth. Old Chael got to be the hero of the night, throw down the card at the end, sign the bill, and walk out like a gangster. Everything worked out.
Nice. And you don't tell her that happened.
No, most things don't. She listens to the show, you and I together told her it happened. But no, on my own, I did not say I was a fool that got out of a car with my wallet sitting on the seat.
It's the same mindset of the cool guys or the guys who blow things up and walk away. They don't watch explosions.
No.
They walk out, lay the car down. They're like, I feel good.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other part of it was I didn't want her to ask, why was your wallet on the seat? And the reason my weight fluctuates, but I think that's pretty normal in this sport. I've got to make weight. I've got to lose weight. And then I don't have to make weight for a little bit. And you gain the weight back. Point being, my pants are a little tight. I didn't want to have to admit to her that I couldn't keep my wallet in my pants and be comfortable in the pants. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. I've gone through that several times. Just sitting in the car. I'm like, I can't sit down like this. Take my wallet out. Stick it on the side.
And I'm not going to go buy new pants because that's a concession that I'm not going to lose the weight against. Like, no. These tight, uncomfortable pants is what motivates me to stay in the gym. So there's my story.
Nice. That's almost an unclimactic ending, though. It's a nice ending. You got your wallet back. But it's not like you had to go like Indiana Jones on this guy and hunt him down throughout the entire city.
That's right. It is a simple story, but the guy came through and I think he deserves credit. All right. Kudos to him. Thank you, Jacob. I told the listeners, let's do a... I see why people like you on here, by the way. You are very good. You are very easy to talk to.
Well, thanks.
I didn't even know if you followed fighting. I thought maybe I'd throw you off. Like, when I come in here, you always have sports on, but it's never fighting. And you know your stuff.
Fighting's never on the TV when we're here.
That's
fighting's
true.
Always on at night.
And I get weekends.
These weird little, I don't know, talk shows. So I just toss it on.
Wait, you know, and you're one of you like Dan Le Batard. I see that you have him on a lot. I did Le Batard last week. And Le Batard is a talent. I have to admit that. And one of the reasons I do his show is he's got a big viewership. So it's true. It's an opportunity. I've done the last three. When I used to go on Le Batard's show, I would go after him. He drove me crazy. Right? He's on the show because his father's in charge or whatever. And I tell him, you got nepotism on your side and you're a charlatan. I don't know anybody watching. I used to bear him and I meant it all. And then all of a sudden I get hired by ESPN. He works for ESPN. I gotta be a nice guy. Well, he calls me out on that. He goes, hey, well, you know, I don't really like the Chael that comes on here and is nice to me. I like the Chael that comes on here and attacks me and calls me a charlatan and comes after me. You know, give me that chance. I'm not going to, what, I flip some switch? That's fake. You know, I are we being confrontational? You know, what are we doing right now? And he's always a scumbag that tees me up on something that he wants out there for, but he doesn't want to be the one to say it. So, like, you know, Connor and Floyd, when Connor had made a couple of race-related comments at the press, so then he's teeing me up to say it. It's like, Lebatard, it's your baby, you name it. This is your show, and if you're going to bring in something as sensitive as race, you say it. So share with us what you're thinking. I think that's a little bit underhanded. I don't love that by him. So he's trying to fire me up, and I'm kind of telling him, I'm not in for it. I'm not in for a fake fire-up. You know, if you want to have a conversation, we see where it goes. I'm fine with that. All of a sudden, he cuts me off. The next thing I know, I got the producer in my ear. The show's over here, moving on. The producer's in my ear thanking me for my time and hanging up. Well, now I am pissed. That's how you're going to treat me? I've been nice to you because we work for the same company. Now you're going to cut me off the show that I got up and did it at 6 a.m., 9 o'clock your time? Now I really am mad. I don't have an outlet for it. I'm on third base wearing a catcher's mitt because he hung up on me. That's a dick move by Lebatard, and I plan to get even with him. You know when I might get even with him? You want to speak about it? Well, I could do it right now.
Here.
I could. I guess we are doing a little bit of it right now. You know when I might blast that son of a bitch? Jim Rome Smackoff next week. As big as Lebatard's show is, he ain't Jim Rome, and he's damn sure not the Smackoff. That just crossed my mind right now. I'm not laying into anybody for something because I've got some paragraph or something ready. I'm going to go. This is a straight shoot. I'm just saying. I owe Lebatard. I don't like being hung up on. I think that's very rude, particularly when I'm the guest. Have you ever seen me hang up on somebody? Even if it's not going my way, I let them say their piece. They're my guest. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's an etiquette there. Yeah. He hangs up on me after race baiting me, and he can say whatever he wants about it. The tape's out there, and he tried to get me to go down a path. And I was cool about it. I say, you know, these guys are up there having fun. Floyd's not upset about it. He went on TMZ and said as much. You know, maybe Connor missed the mark there, but let's not bury it. Let's not do that to him. They're up there trying to have a little bit of fun. And Floyd agreed. So then he comes back at me and says, well, easy for you to say as a white guy with privilege and blah, blah, blah. Lebatard, whoa, let me stop you right there. Where are you going with this? Where are you going? And what are you trying to do to me? What are you trying to do to my state? I don't have standing in this matter. This is between Floyd and Connor. On my own show, I interjected myself, but you don't know I did that. So now you're bringing me on your show and trying to get me to interject to stir the pot. If I go left, you're going to go right. If I go right, you're going to go left. I get how the game works, but then you're going to hang up on me. Hey, you got to let me finish my thought. If you're talking about something as sensitive as that, you have to let me finish my thought. So as a scumbag, I didn't fall for the trap. But I'm pissed that he tried to set the trap.
And then pull the rug right from under you.
And set, you know, fade to black, roll the credits. Now, imagine had I gone down that rabbit hole. Imagine when you're talking about something so sensitive and you start saying words and all of a sudden they're coming out and all of a sudden they're getting recorded. But all of a sudden you're trying to get your thoughts together, but you didn't quite get them together. And somebody hangs up on you and you had said the wrong thing. So, whoa. But I was going to tie that in with the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't let me get out of the hole. I didn't go down that. None of this happened, but it could have. And he hung up on me. And I'm mad about it. And I have the right to be, don't I?
Yeah, totally.
I do have the right to be a little bit mad. You don't hang up on me.
No.
Or anybody else, quite frankly. I mean, it's just a rude thing. It's a scummy move. I mean, don't hang up on somebody. Come on. I came on your show. You asked me to come on. You're being paid to do this show. I'm getting nothing to be your guest. I'm what you're using to bring people into. I mean, come on. There has to be a level of sportsmanship here, and it doesn't involve fading to black and rolling the credit when I'm mid-sentence. It just doesn't.
Now, to his credit, does he have a record for pulling scumbag moves, or does that even come out on his show?
He pulls some scumbag moves on me in the past, but I used to fillet him for it. I used to bash him for it. I just stopped now that we're under the same roof of Disney, or more correct, ESPN. Yeah. Apparently, I misjudged that. He's letting me know by this tactic that he did that, no, we don't have to do that. We don't all get along. I'll bury a Disney guy the same as I'll bury a Fox guy. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't operate under that. So, but now that I know, no more free passes. And if he wants to come on and blindside me with something and then hang up on me, well, I'll take you one step further, Lebatard. I just won't have you there at all. I'll go on Jim Rome's show, who's a lot bigger than your show, and I'll do it on the Smackoff, and I will destroy you. So, maybe. I don't know that Lebatard's going to be worked into my script. I'm just saying I got my eyes on the ball. The Smackoff's around the corner. Lebatard is owed a verbal ass whipping, and he just might get it next Friday.
Yeah, so the Smackoff's next Friday.
I won't be here, by the way. We can't do our quintessential back and forth. Yeah, I'll be covering the Jones DC weigh-in.
So you'll be calling from another studio then?
I'm going to call from my phone. I'm going to have to go to the I'll be in the ESPN studio. So, yeah, it'll be right here on my cell phone. Mm. And I tell you this much, And I don't really know where I'm going to go. And I don't think I'm going to do a script like you've seen me do in the past where I'm trying to read it and get everything. I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to have a couple of bulletin points. I'm going to freestyle it. And I'm telling you, though, I'm coming hot. I lost last. I brought in Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
We had the walkout music, but I tried to tell a story. Do you remember last year? Can I tell you what happened?
Yep.
I wanted to tell a story more in this tone. And the story was basically, hey, these callers are good. In fact, that was my opening line. Jim, mm-hmm. These callers are good, man. What can I say? I'm not really feeling it. I don't know what I'd do. I wonder what Stone Cold would do. And then, boom, Stone Cold comes on, and he's coming in a little bit hot, but he's telling me, you know, raise hell and leave. Boom, it was like Popeye eating his spinach, and I come from there, and now I am firing. Well, I'd already lost him. You know, Jim Rome's the judge. Kyle was over there at the time judging. I'd already lost him. They didn't stay on the journey with me through the story. They were now fatigued. They'd been at it 3 hours. They're trying to keep track and line up their next callers. I had lost them, and it was a mistake. And I swore to myself, I will never make the mistake again of coming in soft. I'm coming in hot. And as I go through these things, and I really think I'm going to put down about 5 bulletin points, and then that's going to be my only notes. And then I'm going to shoot. I'm going to respond to what other people said, and I'm going to do what I do best, which is bludgeon them. And I think that's what I'm going to do. I think that's what my plan is. And the one thing I don't love about that is you do need to control your time. The smack off is supposed to be 2 to 3 minutes, but there's no official control on that. Some guys will go for 4.5 minutes. I think my own buddy, Mike in Indy, makes a mistake going too long. I think he falls in love with his script, and I think he hangs himself slightly. But he's been second 3 times. I mean, it slightly's enough to move him. I think I'm going to let other guys go long and choke on it. The one thing I can't do when you don't have a script that you can practice and rehearse and do it with a timer is control the time. So it's a risk by me, but I think that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to come in there pissed, and I'm going to come in there hot, and I'm going to win this damn thing.
It's what you do best, and I've noticed that Rome, you know, every once in a while, everyone will come out with, like, something weird or novelty. Like, the winner last year invaded his studio.
Right.
Which was, it was neat, but it was played as a fake. It was played as a surprise, which it was totally fake.
But had to be. You know what kind of security he's got down there at CBS Studios?
The security here, you have to go through at least 3 key locks. There's no way that was a surprise. Anyway, but he does... There's that one dude. I think he came in 3rd or 2nd last year, but he just came out rolling. There was no stunt. There was no play. He just came out firing.
Right.
And Rome, I think at that point, was so tired of the stunts. He was just like, this is just good old fashioned straight up smack.
Right.
And that's what I wanted. And that's what I need. And yeah, I do remember you were in here and you started off cold. And that's what Rome said. He said, Chael just wasn't feeling it today. Something was missing. So being on that, going back to what you do best, I think is recipe for success. It will definitely do better than last year. That's for sure. When? We'll see.
Right. I try to come in clever and cute, and I hoped everybody would stay with me and see the story I was trying to tell, like a wrestling match, like a pro wrestling match where you're out there telling a story and then you've got the big finish. It was a miss. You know, and when you only have 2 minutes and sometimes 3, but when you're operating that parameter, there's just not time for that. It was a miscalculation. I won't make the mistake again. And I love the point that you made. And, you know, if you even want to go back 2 years ago when Brad won it, Brad did absolutely – we had guys in helicopters. We had guys on Periscope, which at that time was brand new and was a really big deal. You know, we had the break-in. We had a crime that took place with Left. We had so many things. We had Mike and I in studio together pulling stunts. We had so many different things. And the guy that just sat down with his cell phone, a clear line, and good smack walked away from it. And it was the right call. Brad was one of the best calls I've ever heard, quite frankly. And those are the lessons I'm taking, man. I'm going back old school. I'm not spending money and I'm not renting this. I'm not doing that. I'm coming in old school and I'm coming hot.
Yeah, Rome, I remember his biggest thing last year was he kept saying to all the people who would try to pull off a stunt, he says, at the end of the day, it's about the call. It's about what you say. It's not about the stunt. The stunt's cool, and if you can pull it off, well, good for you. But it's about the call. He wants the old-fashioned stuff. And you know what would be interesting? If everyone just dropped the stunts for 1 year, just 1 year, it's not going to happen. But if everyone did drop the stunts, and then everyone just came out on fire and just bashing each other, how much fun would that be?
Right.
You know what would be interesting? Actually seeing everybody up in front of a stage or something and all lined up, kind of press conference style. And then they all had to smack each other right there. That would be interesting to see. That's not going to happen because it's about the call-in and about responding to everyone in their own turn. But that would just be interesting just right there. No stunts, no weird celebrity polls. No, just straight from the mouth, straight from the mind, straight from the heart, and just kill each other.
Yeah, and I feel like Mike and I are actually guilty of the stunt era. Because we did a first ever tag team and we won it. So if you're looking at next year, you have to look what happened the current year. We were the champions. We pulled a stunt that nobody saw. We swerved the audience. Next thing you know, Mark and Hollywood's, doing it from a bar, and you got left in a helicopter before you have the big break. I mean, there were some really cool things there. I just think to our point that we're trying to make right now, everything goes in waves and it's time to take it back old school.
Yeah.
Grab a cell phone, bring the smack, do your call, drop the mic, and check the results.
On that note, though, the year after you won, I remember you and Mike came in, and then you tried to fake the stunt and then pull it again. And again, no one saw that coming, which almost worked. I think you guys came in second that year. So Jim was still impressed by that. But you guys had a good call, too. There was a lot of suspense, and that's what helped a lot. I think you guys had more airtime when you guys weren't on air than anybody else, because Jim kept talking about, Mike dropped his call and you were coming on later, but you were delaying it long enough. And I think you guys were the last call that day.
Yep.
And Jim was just like, what is going on here? He had no idea, which was a good move. It gave you guys attention. It gave you guys
we had an element of surprise.
It was a surprise. And then all of a sudden you're on and you're going on Mike, and then all of a sudden Mike comes back on near the team again. But I think that is where he was like, okay, now they're back on a team again. We saw this last year. So because that was old school, I think that's what put you guys in second. But still, he liked it. But then, I think the stunt era is starting to come to an end, because last year the guy walked into Jim's office. And now it's going to – and I think Joel said this best. He's like, what's going to happen now? What do we have to do? Like, tie Jim down and like hold him at gunpoint and force him to give us the championship on air right there? Like, that's not a call anymore.
Right.
That's something completely different. I think the stunt era, if you will, has to step back for a second.
I think so too.
And I think Jim feels that too.
Yeah, I personally don't think it's going to step back. I personally think that people are going to keep going with it. Now, the stunt era was fun. I actually enjoyed it. I learned some lessons. You know, the year that Mike and I came in second, we left here depressed. I mean, we were so deflated. And I came in eighth last year. You know how embarrassing that is? But I made some mistakes. You know, I tried to get cute. I tried to get calculated. I was trying to tell a story. I couldn't do it and didn't do it and failed at doing it in my 2 to 3 minute time slot. So at any rate, Lebatard. I was telling you about Lebatard hanging up. Who does he think he's hanging up on? That jobber. I will come down there and take the mic out of your hand, jabroni. You won't even be on this show in a second. A little bit of gratitude from Lebatard is what I was thinking. I really did. I thought it was a bit of an underhanded move. And I thought when he pulled it, I kept my phone with me so they could go to commercial break and then he could personally call me and go, hey, I hope you were okay with that. None of those things happened. He didn't do any of those things. He just brought old Chael on, tried to get him to walk into a landmine, which is 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm not a morning guy. Okay, I get up at 6 all the time, but I'm not awake. I'm not awake for a few. I need some coffee, and it's a whole process. It could have happened. I could have stepped into a bit of a bear trap. Didn't, but then he hangs up. I'm like, you see where I'm, you see, is this making sense? I'm telling you I'm mad about something that didn't happen, that only could have happened. I see why that's a little bit weird, but one step further than that was he tried to get it to happen. And intent has to matter. Your intent was to set Chael up. And while Chael might have played it cool, Chael's keeping track. And I owe you one, Lebatard, and you're going to get it. You may not get it on Rome Show. You may not get it on Rome Show because your name being on Rome Show, on the biggest sports show, on the biggest day of the entire year, is something I may not do you a credit for.
Yeah, it gives him favor.
That's right. But I am considering it. We'll see where that goes. But I really, and it's never good to tell your ideas ahead of time because, you know, we talked about the surprise factor, but there's no hiding it this year. I'm coming as hot as I can, and I really think, I'm thinking I'm just going to freestyle it. I think I'm just, and I've been taking notes on the five things I want to touch on, and that will be, but I keep changing those. But every day when you listen to a show, you know, something changes. You go, maybe I got to substitute this one and put this one in so that it stays a little bit more relevant. So, we'll see how that all goes. Now, I promised the fans, Jacob, I promised the listeners that we would do a Q&A today. With the listeners' approval, I'd like to save that for tomorrow. You know, you and I got going in so many different directions. I think we ran out of time, and I'm getting some really good questions here that I really want to respond to. Some of these I'm reading, I'm going, yeah, that's a good question. We got some talking points there. So let's actually save that for tomorrow. You know, speaking of tomorrow, Thursdays, alone. Are you trying it yet? I tell you all the time. Tell me the truth. Don't say yes just because we're recording. History, okay? That's who's carrying this. The TV show Alone. Have you tried it?
I have not yet, no.
Okay. You know what it's about, though. I've been telling you. Are you yeah. staying with me? Okay, they're dropping these people off. They're alone. I mean, I couldn't really think of a better title than the word alone, okay? Five teams. All attached, father, son, married couple, all very close in their real and personal lives. 10 items. They're given 10 items, but they split it up. So if you and I are a team, actually, we'd make a great team. We work together. We'd be a great team. You're going to get 5 items, but I'm going to also get 5 items. We need, together, we have to have those 10 items for survival, quite literally for our survival. When they drop us off at the location, you're somewhere and I'm somewhere else. And the first thing we have to do is find one another. We are alone. There is nobody with us. We are camping. We are hiking. We are surviving. So the first thing we have to do is mobilize. Now we have our 10 items. So now we have a chance to make it. This is before we find something to eat, something to drink, and some form of shelter. This is before we deal with prey, wild prey, in the element and the climate and the terrain of this geographical location. I don't want to say much more than that because I want the listeners to watch this. The way they're determining a winner is simply you don't give up. So there's 5 teams, 4 are going to say I quit. The winning team is the team that didn't say I quit. And this will go on until somebody does. I thought, for obvious reasons, that there is a production crew. There's not. They're alone. These contestants, they're going to give $500,000 to the winning team. The contestants were taught how to film and document and record themselves. They are that alone. That part I didn't know. I watched 3 episodes until that was revealed to me. And that was revealed to me online. I was so into the show that I went and looked it up as when I found that out. They literally have nobody 24 hours a day. Is that compelling or what? Only history would have the balls to do something like this. And only history would do this and it would be a straight shoot. I mean, if there's anybody that's straight, it's history. It's Alone. It's Thursday nights. Check it out. You got anything you want to close with?
Did you watch the season opening?
That was meant to be a rhetorical question, but I got
one more thing. Did you watch the opening of Game of Thrones?
No, I did not. But the only reason I did not, and I've been counting down the days, and I thought it was in June, so to find out that it's in July when you've been counting down the days for June, imagine how depressing that month was for me. Jacob, I love the show so much, and you can give me any spoiler you want because it's new character. I probably wouldn't be able to keep up unless you tell me something about Jon Snow. I'm not going to watch it till it's done. I got to binge watch it. I have to binge watch it. It's too good.
You know, I'm going to count down the days how long you can last on that.
I will make it.
You're going to make it?
Yeah, I'm a disciplined guy. I will make it, but it will be hard. I mean, it will be hard, but I'm going to make it. So you did watch it.
I didn't watch it, but I know what happened. I've seen enough from like little clips online and all that.
And did it appear delivered?
Okay, can I just say about this?
Yeah.
Anytime Game of Thrones come on for an episode, I think there's only been 2 episodes in the history of the show that actually dropped under 90% approval rating. It's like you just throw out a new one and everyone's going to like it. So in that sense, yes, it did. It was the start of the show. I don't think really anything gigantic happened, but it's the opening. You got to set the pieces.
You have to set the pieces. I fully agree. Yeah, they storytell on there, and you didn't ruin anything for me by telling me that. And I am fully aware of the risk I'm taking by waiting because it's so in the media and it's so out there. And I have a feeling I'm gonna get some clues dropped. I don't give a damn. I'm gonna enjoy every single second. You know, I hate sci-fi. I despise sci-fi. I couldn't even get into like The Matrix, by example, which my brother-in-law Clifton watches five times a year. I mean, seen it at least 30 times. I can't get into it. I can't. I don't like any level of sci-fi, but I don't. And I also don't like. I don't love medieval. I did like Russell Crowe's depiction in Gladiator. I thought that was, but I'm not super into medieval and no zero sci-fi, zero tolerance for sci-fi. It's not sci-fi, and I tell people this: the one out of every 100 people that haven't seen the show and they don't watch for the same reason of that, they just aren't into the sci-fi thing. It's really not. You know, you'll go three episodes and then you'll see one quick glimmer of some sci-fi. You know, the dog that's got the, you know, can be called by a kid when he closes his eyes, or the talking tree or whatever. I mean, you'll see a little bit of that, but it's not sci-fi. Even though there's a, and it's just not. I'm a guy that despises sci-fi. It doesn't bother me in the least.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if you can hang on. This is going to be fun.
I'm going to make it. Oh, there's no question. JLP is disciplined. I am dedicated to this. I'm going to binge watch. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to save them all up. And I'm going to talk to you all and answer your questions. And that will be tomorrow. And until then, I'm JL for Jacob. Thank you for joining us. You all are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with JL Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.